It's been a crazy week. I close my eyes and scenes from across the nation and here in New York flash in front of my eyes. And as I see many of those scenes, I feel outrage at scenes of police beating and gassing and shooting people, incited by our president sending the military to clear peaceful protesters for his photo opportunity by St. John's Episcopal in Washington, D.C., in violation of the very constitution he and the military are sworn to defend. It's just stunning to see marches against police brutality be met with more police brutality. The riot police look so heavily armed, I couldn't distinguish them from combat troops in wartime. Yet peaceful marches took place across the city this weekend. On Saturday, I finally left Walt at home. It was the longest stretch he's spent alone, and he did fine. And I marched in Harlem from down on 125th Street by Marcus Garvey Park up through the neighborhood. And it was in cooperation with the police. They coordinated all the way with the march leaders, leading us up 125th, taking over the entire westbound lane, and then turning up Malcolm X Boulevard again, taking over the whole northern bound lane. I have to say, this moment feels different. The fact that the police are killing Black bodies is not different, but this moment feels different. After these nearly 2 weeks of protests over the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many other Black people by the police, many are saying, this is different. We're not moving on without commitments to fundamental change. I was struck by my former home, Minneapolis, which is where George Floyd was killed. At least four members of the city council have called for dismantling the police department where the four officers have been charged in the death of Mr. Floyd. And they said, and when we're done, we're not simply going to glue it back together. Jeremiah Ellison, a member of the city council, said on Twitter this week, we're going to dramatically rethink how we approach public safety and emergency response. One sign I saw in the march, and I've seen in other marches, that seems to sum up what's happening in part, nothing could sum everything up, is a sign that said, this is not a moment, this is a movement. I think Jesus might have been saying the same thing to his disciples in our text today. This is not a moment, this is a movement. It's a complicated and pretty famous text, this so-called Great Commission text. And so much could be said about it. I feel like I want to just note a couple of things in the text before focusing on the key question about what sort of movement this is Jesus is inviting us to. First, it's most certainly a passage written by Matthew, constructed to expand on the end of Mark's gospel, where a young man in a white robe tells the women to go tell Peter and the other men to meet Jesus in Galilee. And Matthew uses the same word, which is translated to worship or to pay homage to. He uses that same word here that he uses for the Magi at the beginning of Matthew's gospel, when they come to the infant Jesus. So there's kind of a circular coming back to that action that the Magi did before the infant Jesus, now with the disciples doing that. And I think it's so interesting that the text says, and some hesitated or some doubted. And my guess here is that the hesitation or doubt in the disciples is about worship or homage paid to Jesus rather than God alone. and that this was a tension or a debate in Matthew's community. And so he put this in the text here as a way to invite his community to reflect on that tension and reflect on how they regard Jesus in his relationship to God and to them. The baptismal formula here does not show up in the other Gospels, and it's likely taken, interestingly, I think, from the Didache, which is the very same early church document for ritual practice from which we take our Eucharistic prayer. The language here is identical to the language in the Didache's section on baptism. And so that's kind of cool. And it's also very male language. Another time we can have a robust conversation about the language for the Holy Trinity and inclusive language. But for right now, I just want to point out the fact that St. Augustine, just a couple of centuries later, would call the Trinity lover, beloved, and the love between them. So we have some pretty ancient alternatives that don't draw on gendered language for the Holy Trinity. Then I want to just point out that there's a battle of stories going on here. And I have to back up just a couple of verses to show that. If you back up just a couple of verses, you get the story of the guards being paid off with silver coins, the same silver coins that Judas was paid off with to betray Jesus. And these guards are paid off by the powers that be so that they would tell a story that the disciples came in the night and they stole Jesus' body from the tomb, which is a death story. But the disciples know that Mary and the other women knew where the tomb was and that they went to the tomb and they found the stone already rolled away and the grave already empty, which is a story of life. And it just makes me think of the battle of stories that are playing out right now in our country between the powers that be in our nation and those protesting on the streets. And it makes me wonder about discerning stories that are the power of death and stories that are the power of life. And that last comment about the text leads into the key to the text, I think, and to Matthew, which is that Matthew's writing in order to inspire calling and making of disciples. This moment after Jesus' resurrection is not just a moment of reunion or rejoicing, but it's a sparking of a much bigger movement. Hi, Erica and Grace, welcome. And that movement, that's the question I wanted to end this reflection on the text with. That movement is teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded you. That's what Jesus says. And I think returning from the text to this weekend's marches helps to clarify what that teaching is about, so that we are not mistaken about our call as disciples of this one who is Emmanuel, God with us, this one who promises to be with us always. When our march through Harlem came to the corner of Malcolm X and 135th Street, we paused, filling the entire intersection, gathered around the Schoenberg Center for the Study of Black Culture. If you've ever been up this way, you would know that iconic building on the corner. It's just down the street from the 135th Street YMCA where Malcolm X lived as a young man. So we're at this corner and a fiery young preacher had his, I don't even know what they're called, the little things you speak into that come out through the I don't know what those are called either. Megaphones, yeah. So people are holding up these little speaker things so we could all hear. And he was calling us out as Christians for the sin of spiritualizing Christianity, for thinking about our own salvation in heaven and abandoning Black people, immigrants, Native peoples, and others to the hell of white supremacy here on earth. He said, every now and again, the justice of the heavens rushes down like a mighty stream upon earth, reordering our lives and changing everything. In the name of Jesus, he said, may that be so today. Then he called his partner up to sing. And to my great surprise, she got the whole crowd singing the very song we sang in February at St. Lydia's at the baptism of Leona. There is a power in the name of Jesus, she sang, to break every chain, break every chain, break every chain. This song, sung by the gospel artist Tasha Cobbs and written by Will Reagan, takes as its reference point the Isaiah passage Jesus uses for his first sermon. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. This is the work of the disciples. This is what Jesus meant when he said, teach them everything I have commanded you in order to give shape to this movement. So what sustains us on the way if we're sent into this movement and Jesus promises to be with us? Well, most profoundly, this worship, this community, where God meets us, loves us, fulfilling the promise to be with us always. And then Jesus said, study. The very word disciple means one who studies. I've been reading and listening to Ibram Kendi's work, especially his landmark book, Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. He said this week on Instagram, our study should be fueling our resistance, and our resistance should be fueling our study. I propose, as part of our Jesus movement reading in this time, we should read this book together and reflect on how it helps us to be followers of Jesus with the kind of authenticity that that fiery preacher at the corner of Malcolm X and 135th Street calls us to. Let me close with Kendi's quote on Instagram today. It was a quote he posted with a picture of his little daughter. And it's a post that betrays his values, shaped by his parents, who are both pastors. I hope all of us could join him in what he says. He wrote, I love, and because I love, I resist. There have been many theories on what's fueling the growing demonstrations against racism in public and in private. Let me offer another one. Love. We love. We know the lives of our loved ones, especially our Black loved ones, are endangered under the violence of racism. People ask me all the time what fuels me. It's the same. Love. Love of this little girl. Love of all the little and big people who want to live full lives in the fullness of their humanity. Not barred by racist policies. Not degraded by racist ideas, not terrorized by racist violence. Let us be anti-racist. Let us defend life. Let us defend our human rights to live and live fully because we love.